Good, I'm under instructions to get underway. If I asked you whether Calvin preferred the term reformation of the church or restoration of the church, I wonder what you'd say. And if I asked you whether Calvin preferred to speak of the reformation of the church or the reformation of the individual, the reformation of the human person, I wonder what you'd say. Because there is, as far as I can tell, an unwarranted consensus among church historians, and especially among specialists in the Anabaptist and Radical Reformation, that the Radical Reformers were concerned with the restoration of the church, and that this is something which can fairly be contrasted with the reformation of the church, which is what the magisterial reformers were more interested in. And the implication is usually that reformation is a more mitigated, inhibited thing, and that if you want to go the whole hog, what you really do is restore the church. And I'll just give you a couple of quotations to give you the flavour of what I'm suggesting. So a writer called Franklin Little wrote a book called The Anabaptist View of the Church, and he says, in distinguishing church types in state church Protestantism in the 16th century, we may speak of the church of reformers on the one hand and the church of the restoration on the other. G.H. Williams, whose book The Radical Reformation is still kind of the classic tome, says, whereas the reformers among the old believers and the magisterial reformers worked with the idea of reformatio, the Anabaptists, spiritualists and rationalists laboured under the more radical slogan restitutio. As far as I can tell, this is nonsense. As I can't find any evidence for it, and it's absolutely not true of Calvin, who hardly ever speaks of the reformation of the church. I sometimes think I got given a PhD for counting Latin words. And I went through all Calvin's expositions of the prophets, counting the phrase reformation of the church, and I found 16 examples in all these hundreds of lectures that he gave. I found well over 200 examples of the phrase restoration of the church, and well over 200 examples of the phrase reformation of the person. So if I can just ask you to get something clear. Although Calvin spoke of reforming the church, he loved much more to speak of restoring the church. And although Calvin spoke about reforming the church, he loved to speak much more of reforming the person. I'll just give you a little map at the beginning of this second session. Calvin's expositions of the prophets have this phrase, the restoration of the church, or to restore the church. And they are every bit as much a refrain in these lectures and commentaries as that other phrase, the progress of the kingdom of Christ. And in fact, the two turn out to be slightly overlapping, sometimes parallel, sometimes complementary phrases, definitely related, but interestingly different. And they especially allow us to pick up the questions about whether Calvin just saw everything as progress or encountered setbacks, or believed the kingdom of Christ to be confronted with setbacks. And how he saw himself vis-a-vis the papists and come to that the radical reformers. And I want to suggest to you that Calvin was capable of using that one phrase, the restoration of the church, in two different ways. In the first sense, the phrase is simply equivalent to reforming the church on the isolated occasions when he does use that phrase, reforming the church. There's a sense in which Calvin speaks of a restoration of the church, which is simply a reforming of the proper order of church life. But a second strand in which the phrase is much more analogous to the kind of thing we've been thinking of in the earlier session, of the progress of the kingdom of Christ towards its consummation. So I want to begin with strand one, which is the restoration of the church as reformation, and then come secondly to the second strand, in which the restoration of the church is not reformation, it's redemption, actually. For Calvin, church history is at this level, at one level, a series of long periods of collapse, punctuated by brief seasons of reformation. Like human beings, the church was once originally established in integrity and purity and freedom, and it's had a dignity and a splendour about it. Though actually Calvin isn't very clear about when that was. But from the beginning, the church, like the human person, has been subject to corruption from within. As a result, the outward appearance of the church is corrupted, defiled, reduced to deformity. These are all Calvin's phrases. And stands in need of restoration. But this restoration is a restoration of form or order, of church order. And it's simply reformation, reformation. But as I say, it's remarkable how little Calvin actually uses the phrase reformation of the church. How many times did I say from memory? It's 17. 17 instances in all the expositions of the prophets put together. And in most of those cases, as you would expect, the context shows that Calvin's concern was with the outward appearance, with church structures. And in almost every case, these reformations are associated with two of the godly kings of the Old Testament, Hezekiah, mostly in Calvin's commentary on Isaiah, but also in the lectures on Jeremiah, and Josiah, chiefly in his lectures on Jeremiah. Significantly, Calvin also uses the term restoration in association with the work of those same two kings. And the way he understands the restoration of the church, which they accomplished, explains why he also describes them as being involved in reformation. That's to say, he understood those two kings to be restoring the proper form of the church. I'll give you an example from Calvin's comments on Isaiah 28 to 32, which are about the work of King Hezekiah. According to Calvin, Isaiah was prophesying at a time when the dispersion of the church was such that few of the faithful dared hope for its condition to be improved. The prophet, however, teaches that the means by which the church may be reformed afresh is ready at God's hand. The situation facing Isaiah was that some who wished to be considered pillars of the church were trying as far as they were able to raise it to its foundation. There's that idea of kind of the church facing corruption from within. It has internal enemies. And then Calvin discerns a parallel with the circumstances of his own day. He says this: although as a result of a near extinction of the light of faith,
a horrendous corruption of the worship of God. The people were then deformed. They nevertheless boasted of their priesthood, just as we see the papists today shamelessly bragging in a similar way, although a deadly confusion cries out that the entire form of the church has perished among them. For this reason, the prophet defines what the reformation of the church will involve. And into that situation, Isaiah foretells an imminent restoration of the church and proclaims, according to Calvin, that God will be gracious to his church and will restore her to integrity. The best method of restoring her is when proper government is instituted, when everything is administered with propriety and in good order. This prediction undoubtedly relates to Hezekiah and his reign, under which the church was restored and reformed to its former splendour. That's a kind of classic statement in Calvin, a classic example of how he understands this restoration of the church in this first sense. The verbs reformo and restitio are used as synonyms. The church is said to be reformed to a former splendour. It's an original integrity which is being restored. And the method is to reintroduce proper government and administration in the church. Restorations of this kind, of this first kind, are not accomplished once and for all. They need to be undertaken again and again whenever the church is in a state of collapse. And so Calvin offers Hezekiah as an example for his own day. This is a backward looking restoration, contrary, I would say, to what those church historians of the radical reformers were suggesting, no less radical, no less wholehearted than a restoration. It is a reformation, but for Calvin, in this sense, reformation and restoration are the same thing, and it is something total and complete, and takes you right back to all the original splendour of the church. This first strand, then, I could summarise like this. Calvin's view of the restoration of the church is a restoration of the original form of the church in the light of the Word of God. It's exactly equivalent to the reformation of the church. And it's something backward-looking. It looks back to how the church was in its original splendour and integrity. I suggest to you as preachers that this kind of restoration is something that we must always be alert to the need for. We have a responsibility as preachers to confront what Calvin would call deformity or degeneration, specifically in the form and order of church life. Calvin's concern here is very definitely with the externals of church order. And it is very definitely a backward-looking thing that hankers after a golden age which once was. I think it's important to acknowledge that this kind of backward glance has a place in the ministry to which we're entrusted. But I don't know if you are like me, but I don't just want a backward-looking ministry. I don't just want a nostalgic ministry which looks back to the good old days, whether they were the apostolic era or the era of the reformers or the era of the evangelical revival or the era of, I don't know, the 1950s when evangelicalism was a kind of nice, clear, monolithic thing. I don't want simply to be looking back. And for me, there is something especially exciting and stimulating about the second strand in Calvin's understanding of this phrase, the restoration of the church, which I call restoration of the church as redemption, progress to ultimate consummation. And already you'll see connections with the sense of the progress of the kingdom of Christ. In his expositions of the prophets, Calvin develops this second strand, a second way in which he uses this phrase, the restoration of the church. And you won't be surprised to discover that he uses this phrase in this second sense, especially when he's concerned with the return of the people from exile. If it is true, and in one sense it is, that Calvin interprets the history of the church as a series of long periods of collapse, punctuated by brief seasons of reformation, it is also true at another level, as we saw before coffee, that he understands all church history after the return from exile in Babylon to be one single and continuous act of redemption. And in this sense, the restoration of the church is something begun under the auspices of Cyrus as the people returned from exile, and has continued uninterrupted ever since, and will continue until the last day. And you'll see that restoration in this sense corresponds very closely to what we were saying before about the progress of the kingdom of Christ. Calvin was then inclined to understand the prophetic era, even before the exile, as something dominated by the imminent captivity of the people of God. And he consistently says that their prophecies were intended to console the Jews by looking beyond the exile that was coming to the day when they would return from exile. And that return from exile he describes as the restoration of the church. And time and time and time again, Calvin will say, will begin, he'll give a text, and then his first sentence of interpretation will be, the prophet is speaking here about the restoration of the church. As with the kingdom of Christ, I haven't, I'm afraid, found any key that can tell us when we can anticipate that Calvin is going to begin his expositions with that phrase. But if you read these expositions for a while, you kind of begin to greet that phrase as a familiar friend. The prophet is speaking about the restoration of the church. And when Calvin then goes on to elaborate after that initial sentence, his primary concern is to identify the time at which this restoration took place. And here we're in similar territory to the territory we were in before coffee. As with his treatment of the kingdom of Christ, he asks, when is the beginning of this restoration of the church to be located? And again, he gives an ambiguous answer. On the one hand, he acknowledges that since the prophecies of the Old Testament were prompted either by the imminent prospect of the Babylonian captivity or the present reality of it, there's an obvious sense in which the restoration of the church took place when that captivity came to an end, the people of God returned from Israel. And he'll frequently say things like, the restoration of the church began when the people returned from Babylon. Now that's doubly interesting. First of all, that he thinks that the return of the people from exile was the beginning of the restoration of the church, and that it was just the beginning. That was not the restoration of the church. It was the beginning of the restoration. At the same time, Calvin is extremely sensitive to elements in prophecy for which he could see no fulfilment in the ministries of Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah and other post-exilic figures. He looks at their ministry and he looks at the prophecies and he sees a mismatch, and especially where the prophecies were of the calling of the Gentiles, the hope of the day when the Gentiles would come to the knowledge of God. And so he will also say, a restoration of the kind which had been promised is not evident here. And so he'll say the restoration of the church has clearly begun, but equally clearly, this prophecy is not totally fulfilled by the events of the return from exile. And in addition, Calvin is also very sensitive to especially in the commentary on Isaiah, to the times when Isaiah couches his prophecy in terms which clearly transcend any kind of mundane fulfillment, you know, the kind of cosmic language that Isaiah uses. So there is, in both those ways, some restraint about the extent to which Calvin feels able to identify the end of the captivity as the restoration of the church. And he uses a kind of couple of alternative expressions instead. One is, he'll say that when the people return from exile in Babylon, it was some kind of restoration. Or else he'll say, it was a restoration of the people, but only the beginning of the restoration of the church. And that, again, he uses often enough for you to recognize it as a hermeneutical device, really. He says this was the beginning of the restoration of the church, but really only a restoration of the people. When he makes a distinction like that, it's clear that he understands the restoration of the church to be something that goes beyond the restoration of the people. Another phrase he'll use a lot is to describe the exile as the prelude to the restoration of the church. Let me quote from his commentary on Isaiah. Chapter 9. If we wish to ascertain the genuine meaning of this passage, we must again consider what has already been stated elsewhere, that the prophet, when he speaks of bringing the people back from Babylon, does not have a single age in view, but includes all the rest right up until Christ came and brought the most complete liberty to his people. The deliverance from Babylon was like a prelude to the restoration of the church. Was intended to last not just for a few years, but until the Messiah should come, and he would bring true salvation not only to their bodies but to their souls. When we've made a little progress in reading Isaiah, we will discover that this was his usual practice. That's kind of programmatic statement, isn't it, for how to interpret Isaiah. And I'd have to say, whatever Isaiah's usual practice may have been, it was definitely Calvin's usual practice to interpret Isaiah in this way. But so far what you've got there is two steps. A kind of semi-fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecies at the moment when the people returned from Babylon, but the restoration of the church not really complete until Christ came. Seems like there are two stages. This is an equivalent passage from the lectures on Daniel. For the first renovation of the church took place when liberty was restored to the people, and the second occurred at the coming of Christ. But it's much more common to find not those two steps, but the three with which we were familiar earlier in connection with the progress of the kingdom of Christ. For as with Calvin's exposition of the progress of Christ's kingdom, there are actually three decisive moments in the restoration of the church. Prophecies concerning the restoration of the church refer first to the return of the Jews from exile, secondly to the coming of Christ, and thirdly to the last day. So here is Isaiah 60:15. It's right for us to remember, as I have so often said, he says, that the prophet is speaking not of a few years, not of a short period, but embraces the whole course of redemption from the end of captivity to the proclamation of the gospel, there's the first jump, and finally right up to the end of the coming of the reign of Christ. Or this from Isaiah 52. When the Lord restored the Jews to liberty and employed the ministry of Zerubbabel, Ezra and Nehemiah, these things were fulfilled. Prophecy done. Yet at the same time they extend up to the coming of Christ, by which the church was gathered from the ends of the earth, but they also go on to Christ's last coming, by which all things shall be perfectly restored. There's the triple reference, as in the progress of Christ's kingdom. And Calvin justifies this interpretation on the basis that the return of the Jews from exile was like the birth of the church, and all other developments in the history of the church are developments within a single lifetime, that the biography, if you like, of the same church. He'll speak of the apostolic era as the youth of the church, for example, and employing the same analogy a little differently, he even looks back to the redemption from Egypt as the first birth of the church and the return from exile as a second birth of the church. And the whole of church history after the end of the exile in Babylon is a single continuous biography of God's church. The result is that at whatever point in history you stand, as a member of the church, you are caught up in this restoration process. For Calvin, in this second sense, the restoration of the church is both an eschatological concept and an evangelistic one. Eschatological in that although it won't be complete until the last day, its progress towards that completion is inexorable. This is Isaiah 65, one of the passages in which the prophet speaks of the creation of the new heavens and the new earth. The prophet is speaking about the restoration of the church. This is certainly true. The prophet is speaking about the restoration of the church that took place when the exiles returned from Babylon. This is certainly true, but that restoration is imperfect if it is not extended up to Christ, and even now we are in the progress and course of it, and these things will not be fulfilled until the last resurrection. This note of movement is again one of the features that unites the restoration of the church and the progress of Christ's kingdom. Whereas in the first sense of the phrase, the restoration of the church, it's something which God accomplishes again and again at intervals through history. In this second sense, it's something which is effected by God once and for all, but not in a moment, over the whole course of church history. In his commentary on Isaiah, Calvin, alluding presumably to Acts 3:21, designates the second coming of Christ as the day of restoration, because he says everything which now appears disordered will be restored to integrity and will assume a new form. And although phrases like the restoration of the world, the renovation of the world, the restoration of all things, allusions to Christ as the one who comes to restore the world, allusions to a time when all things will be restored. Phrases like that are quite rare in the Institutes, but they're thick on the ground in these expositions of the prophets. And I think it's because, for Calvin, the restoration of the church is both a foretaste and an agent of the restoration of the world and of all things. For Calvin, it is the restoration of the world which is the ultimate object of God's redeeming act, but it is that activity is currently only present and evident in the ongoing restoration of the church. The restoration of the church is the first fruits of a restoration which will ultimately encompass all things. In fact, Calvin at one point says, the restoration of the church may be regarded as the renovation of the whole world. In this sense, I suggest, the restoration of the church for Calvin is both the locus of God's recreation, the place where God's recreation is taking place, and the means by which ultimately all things will be restored. Secondly, the restoration of the church is evangelistic. That's to say, the restoration of the church consists, in the second sense, not in getting church order right, but in church growth, in a numerical increase in the numbers of those who belong to the church. And this is especially the point at which Calvin becomes keenly aware of the part that his own generation is playing in this restoration process. The point isn't simply that Calvin repeats again and again that the restoration of the church is in progress in his own day, although he does. In fact, in the preface to his commentary on Daniel, he confesses that God has carried forward the restoration of the church farther than I had dared hope for in our own day. It's more that he believes that he and his fellow preachers are contributing to this process, is slightly ambivalent at this point, because he knows that in fact the restoration of the church is God's job. It is God's work. It is only possible for the church to be restored by the hand of God, he says. And that reassures him that the process can't be hindered by any human agency. There is nothing any human being can do which is going to hinder the process of the restoration of the church, which God himself is undertaking. On the other hand, he knows that human beings have a positive contribution to make, and he's equally insistent in saying that God chooses to restore his church through human instruments. About the method of restoring the church, he says, whereas God could rebuild the church all by himself without the help of human beings, he deigns to employ their hands. And for this reason, Calvin goes far as to say, godly teachers renew the world. By their teaching, God restores the church, and the restoration of the church is the agent by which God is renewing the world. This is a higher view of preaching even than the Book of Common Prayer ordination service, I would have to tell you. The role of these human agents in restoring the church, as Calvin understands it, is to propagate the gospel. And the progression of his argument here is that the church is restored as increasing numbers of individuals are reconciled to God and restored in his image. And this takes place in response to the preaching of the gospel, which is the responsibility of human agents. In the earlier strand of restoration as reformation, when he exhorts his contemporaries, his comments are directed really at leaders of church and state, to get them to purify ecclesiastical institutions. In this second strand, he's seeking to motivate preachers to preach the gospel. And an illuminating sentence occurs in the course of Calvin's comments on Isaiah 44, where he says, the cardinal element in the restoration of the church is the reformation by which the Lord restores his image in the elect. That's to say, the restoration of the church consists in the restoration of individual human beings. And here, Calvin uses the language of reformation. He's talking about people rather than churches. It's a little known but incontrovertible fact that Calvin preferred to use the language of reformation about people than churches. And, of course, this isn't just theory for Calvin. And there's a wonderful passage in Calvin's comments on Isaiah 66, which are well worth reading if you can get hold of the commentary. The prophet Isaiah uses the metaphor of a mother, and Calvin explains the metaphor as follows. He says, the prophet means that the church will be restored in such a manner that she will acquire a large and numerous offspring, although she may appear for a time to be childless and barren. In other words, although it may appear that the church is going through a barren time, ultimately the church will have a large offspring. And then he applies this prophecy in the usual way, begins with a qualified affirmation that this prophecy was fulfilled when the people returned from Babylon, then goes on to suggest, predictably, that a more splendid demonstration of this prophecy took place when, at the preaching of the gospel, a diverse and numerous offspring was generated for the church. That's a reference to the apostolic era. And then departs slightly from his normal pattern of interpretation, and instead of alluding to the last day, says, haven't we seen the fulfillment of this prophecy in our own times? To how many offspring has the church given birth during the last 30 years in which the gospel has been preached? It's the only time I have ever found Calvin being as specific as saying the last 30, referring quite so specifically to a time period within his own lifetime. Clearly, the positive response of his own generation to the preaching of the gospel is taken by Calvin to be a mark that the restoration of the church is ongoing. And that sense that it was ongoing was clearly an incentive for him in his preaching of the gospel. So this second strand in this phrase, the restoration of the church, in Calvin's understanding, can be summarized like this. it's the one uninterrupted act of redemption which began when the captivity of the people of God in Babylon was brought to an end, was effected when Christ redeemed his people from captivity to the devil, and is destined to culminate in the restoration of all things. It's a process of restoration which corresponds to the progress of Christ's kingdom towards its consummation. Carries both evangelistic and eschatological overtones. Two or three things just to emphasize before we turn to questions and discussion. The first is that I feel strongly in a way that the contemporary church has lost and needs to recover the only agent for evangelistic activity for Calvin is the local church. Evangelism for Calvin is the business of local congregations. Evangelistic fruit results in congregational growth, and congregational activity is the right place for evangelistic activity. Secondly, both where this phrase restoration and its cognates, these analogous words like reformation and renovation are concerned, and indeed where the phrase the progress of the kingdom of Christ is concerned, there are clear soteriological correlates of what are primarily ecclesiological categories. That's to say, every time Calvin applies this kind of language to the church, you can find parallel ways in which he applies this language to the individual experience of the Christian life, in a very stimulating way, I think. He speaks of the Christian life in a very similar way to the way in which I've just described the restoration of the church. The same kind of thing, the repeated periods of the repeated pattern of repentance and receiving forgiveness correspond to that kind of first strand of the repeated need for the church to be restored and reformed. The wonderful sense in which day by day we are being renewed in the image of Christ corresponds to that second strand sense in which the church is being restored inexorably. Similarly, where the phrase the progress of the kingdom of Christ is concerned, Calvin also uses that kind of language to describe the Christian life. Our growth and progress in holiness is a growth and progress in the extent to which Christ's reign is manifest in our lives. And it's interesting to me, illuminating, fascinating to see Calvin's soteriological categories and his ecclesiological categories mirroring one another so closely. Thank you.